Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with my co-host, Greta Anderson. Hello, Greta.
Hi, Ursula, and hello to you, the listener. It's the first Friday in June, and the festival season is gearing up. Any idea how the weather is shaping up for the weekend? I'm thinking, of course, about the folks up in Story City, where Scandinavian Days are happening this weekend.
It's predicted to be at least partly sunny today and tomorrow, with highs in the mid-70s. Most of the rain and or thunderstorms are predicted for the nights, so that's good news. On Sunday, the chance of rain and thunderstorms will go up to about 40% during the day, so be ready for rain on Sunday. Starting next week with Monday, sunny weather expected with temperatures in the low 80s. So far, so good this summer.
And here in Ames, the Main Street Cultural District is kicking off its summer festival season with the Art Walk in downtown Ames from 5 to 8 p.m. today. This is the 20th annual Art Walk, and it's one of my favorite events here in Ames. There are activities for both children and adults, such as sidewalk chalk contest, a sip and paint event at the local wine bar, and an R&B concert. More than 40 artists are displaying, demonstrating, and selling their work inside or in front of selected businesses. Here at KHOI, local artist Todd Michael is showing and selling his paintings out front, and we appreciate having him with us. And inside KHOI, the newly formed KHOI Doodle Squad is performing a mural to live music alongside a display of doodled coffee cups. We invite you to doodle alongside them. There are supplies and refreshments. So come by and see us at KHOI, 410 Douglas Avenue in the old Ames Pantorium building.
In addition, there are three openings downtown during Art Walk. The Main Street Cultural District is having a reception at their headquarters for the Neighborhood Sculpture Program of Public Artworks. The Octagon has an opening reception for their exhibition of works by Roy Kasach in the Community Gallery, which is across the street from KHOI on Douglas. And there is an opening reception at the ISU Design Center on Main for their new exhibition featuring artwork by youth involved with global arts therapy. This Des Moines-based nonprofit organization provides arts education and sustainable development opportunities for disadvantaged or homeless youth and women.
And we will be learning more about that interesting organization, Global Arts Therapy, and the work they do later in the hour. And after that, we will be speaking with Ron Smith and Ron Fossey, who are local pickleball players. What is pickleball, you ask? Well, you'll just have to keep listening to find out, because I'm not going to fake it. I have no idea myself. Unless you do, Ursula. Pickleball?
No clue.
Okay, the two Rons will be stopping by the studio later in the hour to give us the lowdown on this game and a clinic happening tomorrow that can help you get your pickleball game on.
All right. First, though, since it is the beginning of the month, we want to check in with the City of Ames for an overview of what's in store. Susan Guiazda, Ames Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, is here to talk about what we can expect during the month of June. Susan has agreed to stop by to speak with us each month to give us a preview of what activities the city is planning, and we really appreciate this. Hi, Susan, and thank you.
Good morning. It's my pleasure to be here.
What's in store for us for June?
Well, I do know what pickleball is, but I'll save that surprise for later. I have
give
played
us a
it,
hint.
And it is a lot of fun.
Well, give us one hint.
It involves paddles.
Okay.
Or rackets. I'm not sure what they're called. But that is something to stay tuned. Last night, we kicked off municipal band concerts. I hope everybody had an opportunity to experience that. It was a great kickoff to the season. Municipal band concerts are held every Thursday in June and July. And one particular Thursday is special for us because it's Ames City Council Night at the Bandshell. And that will be held Thursday, June 18th. Also, our special guest that night at the Bandshell concert is Simon Estes. It's usually always a wonderful show, and we do reschedule if we have bad weather. And in the past 10 years, we've only had to reschedule twice, so let's keep our fingers crossed.
What is City Council evening?
Well, it just simply means that the Ames City Council members will be there, and we will be giving out cookies. We have ice-cold Ames water. Because, of course, it is usually very warm at those concerts, and so there's nothing better to enjoy your slightly warm cookie than with to have an ice cold glass of water. So,
but the city council will not be performing. They'll just be available to.
That's a great. I absolutely need to clarify that they are not performing with the band. City Council Night at the Van Shell means that they are there as the host, and they will be giving out free refreshments.
Excellent.
So, I have been very cavalier with the way that I have called it City Council Night at the Van Shell, and never thought about that interpretation. So, people may have higher expectations of our council members than they're actually able to fulfill. They're just there with the food, which usually makes people pretty happy.
But they're probably also available to speak with as well.
Absolutely. They hand out cookies, talk to folks, ask them about their concerns, and then they do get up onto the Municipal Van Shell stage and introduce themselves, and then Simon Estes typically performs. So it really is a wonderful night.
That's wonderful, yeah.
And all the municipal band concerts are really a wonderful way to spend your Thursdays. I see families there, seniors there, all ages, bringing picnics, just enjoying Van Shell Park, enjoying the playground that's nearby, and absolutely enjoying the music. So that's something that people, I hope, can mark their calendars for.
Tell us again when those are.
Those are Thursdays. Pre-concert entertainment starts at 7 p.m. The actual Ames Municipal Band concert goes on at 8 p.m. In June and July at the Van Shell concert on Duff.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I just wanted to alert people to was I think most people now are familiar with the emerald ash borer, which is sort of a parasite that we have. Has not been spotted in Ames yet, but has been spotted near Ames. It's been identified, I believe, as close as 10 miles from Ames. We are anticipating some rather devastating results from the emerald ash borer in that there's been no evidence of ash trees that have been able to survive.
This is an insect?
It absolutely is an insect. It's the larva that gets into the tree trunks and causes the damage, and there have not been ash trees that have been able to survive the damage of the larva. So as a proactive response to the emerald ash borer, the city is removing ash trees in the public rights-of-way, which, just to remind you, is the space between the sidewalk and the curb. Those are called street trees or public right-of-way trees, and we're also looking at trees in parks to make sure that they are maintaining their integrity and that they're safe. But over the next, actually, 20 years, there is a plan to remove and replace ash trees with a more diversified urban forest. So we realized in doing an inventory of trees in Ames that we are overplanted in ash trees. So, and we're also overplanted in maples. And so what we're trying to do is a staggered removal of trees so it doesn't look like places are devastated. We will slowly, year after year, take a couple of trees from a neighborhood and replant them in a staggered pattern with diversified species so the ash tree removal will not seem as stark. But what you will see is a lot of those trees were removed last winter. They were simply just cut down. And now we're going to do, beginning this coming week, you'll start seeing contractors around in the neighborhoods removing the stumps to prepare for replanting.
Yeah, that's the biggest job, is removing the roots, right?
Yeah.
Is there any use for the tree trunks as lumber? Are you able to sell that?
Well, at this point, what we have started to do is remove the youngest trees. So they're not probably of the size you would need for lumbering. So they probably will be chipped, and we'll use them in the parks and around the park system. As we get into some of those older ash trees that are very large, I think we're looking at ways that that lumber can be reclaimed, the wood can be used again. I have actually talked to a couple woodworkers. I didn't know how easy it would be to work with ash. Some wood sculptors do work in ash wood, and there may be some interest for that, but obviously we would look for ways to reuse that product. Mm-hmm. It's just a shame to see these beautiful trees, but we just want to be prepared, and we certainly don't want them to cause any potential harm to somebody.
Reminds me of tunnels of elm trees, and it was such a dramatic change when those trees left. It was, the whole town looked different.
People still have very strong memories of Dutch elm disease, and so when we explained to them emerald ash borer, there really hasn't been a lot of outcry that we try to save them. There are injections you can do to ash trees, but it is ongoing for the life of the ash tree. And so in some instances, we are injecting trees with some type of protection that would last a few years, but it is only simply until we can get to those trees to remove them to get stronger, diversified trees growing in their place. Residents have been very understanding of that. And in fact, if there's been any surprises, it has been that people don't want it staggered. They want to get the new trees planted right away. And they're saying, no, don't wait. a couple of years to cut the second one down. Just cut them both down now, and I want new trees in there. I think that's understandable. Mm-hmm. People see what's happening and that just sort of waiting for the inevitable, and so people want to get started fresh right away. And we'll work with neighbors that have that kind of desire.
If somebody has an ash tree on their property, are you asking them to look for signs?
Well, we would always, as a property owner, you would want to make sure that your own trees are safe and that they're structurally sound. You don't want them to cause any damage to your own property or to your neighbors or to yourself. And so with ash trees on private properties, obviously we're encouraging neighbors to take some action, to look around and maybe speak to contractors. There's a lot of good arborists out there who know some options. I have an ash tree in my front yard, and I honestly have not really decided what to do with it. It's not small, but it's not huge. So I'm just not sure what the best course of action would be. So I'm going to be contacting an arborist soon and making some decisions on that tree. So again, these are public trees and street trees. And so you'll see some action around town next week as they remove those stumps and prepare for planting of new trees in the fall. And then we have a public meeting coming up. A lot of people use the 6th Street Bridge. That's the bridge by Brookside Park. That bridge, as I think you probably know, is being replaced. That will be a huge project. It's actually gone into a couple of years now of design work and getting public input on what that bridge should look like. It's kind of iconic and classic. At the bottom of the hill, sort of the entryway into the park, it goes across the river.
Not the one across the railroad.
No, that's another iconic bridge. But the one, if you're actually in Brookside Park looking up, you can see there's a path that walks under it. And actually, it's quite a transportation route for people getting to campus, to and from campus along 6th Street, in front of the skate park, in front of the entry to Brookside Park. It is a well-traveled thoroughfare, and replacing the bridge will obviously disrupt that.
Why is it being replaced?
It's quite old, and the maintenance of it had gotten to the point where it simply made more sense to replace it. And also, I don't know, if you've biked across it or walked across it, it's challenging. There's quite a drop-off from the street to the curb. It's not a particularly wide sidewalk. And so modern transportation suggests that changes of widening it a little bit would make it a little safer for people, and also more of a separation between pedestrians, bikers, and the street is a good idea as well.
Are they making it look different?
The design of it is pretty much finished up, and there was a lot of public input on what it should look like. There were several different designs that were out there, and the council ultimately picked one that I think reflected the history of the bridge. And noting that it was sort of an entry bridge into a park-like area, they went beyond just a typical replacement bridge into some additional aesthetics. And so you'll see some ironwork on it, but also, again, using those modern transportation separation barriers to keep cars and bikes and pedestrians able to cross the bridge safely.
So 6th Street will be closed for a while.
It will be. And so the meeting, Thursday, June 11th at City Hall from 5 to 6:30 p.m. will be an opportunity for pedestrians and bikers to provide input on detours. We're going to try to detour bikers and pedestrians through the park, because if you can't go across 6th Street, you actually almost have to detour. Well, you actually have to detour at Lincoln Way. It is quite a ways out of your way. But if we can detour people through the park, they can get back onto 6th Street beyond after the bridge and continue to campus or wherever they're heading. So it takes a little bit of thinking, but if you've ever driven along Ridgewood, you can go down into the tennis court area, walk through the park, cross the pedestrian bridge through the park, and come back out on 6th Street. But people who do this more often than I do are probably more familiar with other paths and other ways, and there are some challenges with that as well. There's some steps. And on a bike, they're going to have to come up with some alternatives, some ways to make that safe. And so you might want to attend that meeting from 5 to 6:30 p.m. on Thursday, June 11th in the City Council Chambers. They'll have maps. It'll be a come-and-go open house kind of situation. And I know a lot of commuters use that path. So I think a lot of people are aware of it. During Bike to Work Week, we heard a lot of comments about it, concerns on how people would get through that. And so I think that the C staff is trying to work with those groups to make sure that their needs are being met. So
okay.
June is a very busy month. We have some other things wrapping up. Today actually is the last day if you're wanting to provide any input to the city's Community Development Block Grant Annual Action Plan. You can do so by going online to our website, cityofames.org. You will see under the news section off the front page at the bottom, it says next. And if you follow that new section, you can get information on making some comments into that. Every year, the city is granted some federal dollars for federal block grant projects. And those projects specifically benefit people of low to moderate income or aid in the elimination of slum and blight, or they meet economic development needs of the community. So there's sort of specific targets for that money. We get almost $500,000. We are budgeted that for the next fiscal year. So if you have ideas or want to comment on that, you certainly can.
Can you give one example of what an idea would be?
Well, last year we used community development block grant money to improve sidewalk infrastructure near O'Neill Park, which is in what they talk about a low and median income census tract area. So if you're in a neighborhood, a lot of our inner neighborhoods are on the census tract considered low and moderate income. So you can do some infrastructure improvements, improve the sidewalks, the curb cuts to make them handicapped accessible. We did some improvements to the park itself, and so we did a ribbon cutting on that last year. That would be an example mm-hmm. of some community development block grant money.
Great. You also purchased the land across from
yep,
City Hall.
Absolutely. 6th Street property was purchased with community development block grant money to provide some low to moderate income housing options because that has been an identified need. So we have had a lot of really great projects that have benefited a lot of people in the community through community development block grant money. And there's always ideas for how we can continue to utilize that money to the best interest of the community. And we're happy to take that input.
Okay.
Just a reminder, I mean, it seems like a ways away, but 4th of July is sort of around the corner. And this year, the 4th of July is on a Saturday, which means I just want to get on people's calendars that a lot of federal, state, and municipal buildings and offices will be closed on Friday, July 3rd. And again this year, as we've done for the last 3 years, the fireworks will be on Friday, July 3rd. We are doing them the day before. There is a lot of questions on why are the fireworks on the day before the 4th of July. And it just simply is a matter of the Young Professionals of Ames, the group that has been running the fireworks, had negotiated a much more favorable contract with the vendor. Vendors are very busy this time of year, and there's not a lot of vendors that do fireworks. We had a lot of favorable input the first time that we did it the day before. People like the idea that they can stay up late. Most people have the 4th of July off work. They can sleep in and then enjoy those 4th of July activities, the picnics, and once again, the Ames 4th of July parade and the 4th of July community breakfast will be on the 4th. So it's kind of a two-day deal. So go to the fireworks the night before on Friday, July 3rd, and then join us on Saturday, July 4th in front of City Hall from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. We'll be doing the mayor and city council do the community pancake breakfast. And again, they're the host. They don't actually cook the pancakes, but they will certainly help you get your pancakes, provide water, coffee. We'll have live music again this year. That was very successful last year, so we're going to have some musicians play again at this year's pancake breakfast. And then at 11 a.m. is the 4th of July parade on Main Street. Really a nice way to spend your holiday celebrating your country, celebrating with your neighbors, celebrating your community.
So breakfast at
8:30 to 10:30 a.m.
And parade at 11.
Parade at 11, yep. So it really is a great way to spend your morning. So, yeah, and then just remember that a lot of city places are closed on Friday, July 3rd.
I have a question about Breckenridge.
Okay.
I know that City Council has Breckenridge on its agenda later in this month, a couple weeks. What do you know about Breckenridge?
We sent out notice that that item is coming up on the June 23rd council meeting. And again, just a reminder that council meetings have been moved to 6 o'clock. Typically, our council meetings have been starting at 7. Now we start at 6 p.m. On Tuesday, June 23rd, the council will discuss a negotiated agreement with Breckenridge. There is more information on our website about that, but it is regarding the property on the site of the old Ames Middle School. Breckenridge Group came in and purchased three fairly large parcels of land along State Street and Lincoln Way and had wanted to put in primarily student housing. And they were unhappy with the way that that property was zoned. They had wanted a higher density than was allowed by the zoning, and the council disagreed and said this is the zoning, and actually the situation ended up in court. For several months, negotiations have been ongoing, I think, to avoid prolonged litigation, and a compromise deal was hammered out. Iowa State University is interested in purchasing the south parcel of land that actually abuts research plots that they have. And so I believe that that is being considered yesterday and today at the Board of Regents. They're meeting in Ames. So I don't know the outcome of that, but I know that their intent was to look at purchasing that property from Breckenridge. And then on the site of the old middle school, the city has proposed that we use community development block grant money to purchase that site from Breckenridge and look at providing housing in there. And then what they call the north parcel, which is the parcel along Lincoln Way, Breckenridge would develop residential and some commercial property, which would look a lot like residential housing units with businesses along the front. We'll see what happens at the June 23rd meeting. That will need council approval to go forward. And I'm sure that there'll be a lot of interest in how that plays out.
And again, the time of
those meetings now start at 6 p.m. And they had started at 7 p.m. for a long time. So 6 p.m. is your new start time for city council meetings.
Okay, this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, one of your hosts today, together with Greta Anderson, and we're speaking with Susan Guiazda, Ames Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Susan has been giving us a preview of Ames plans for the month of June. Any last words, Susan?
Thank you for asking me on. Again, information, if you have questions, is usually available on our website at cityofames.org, so please check that.
cityofames.org. Thank you, Susan, for coming by. We really appreciate your willingness to come and give us an update, and it's nice being in communication with you in the city.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts today, Greta Anderson, together with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. That was the Dill Pickle Rag by Charles Johnson from the CD Second Course. We'll be talking about a new sport called pickleball that's gaining a following here in Ames. But first, I wanted to introduce you to Global Arts Therapy, based out of Des Moines and doing work among children in Nepal as well as here in central Iowa. Some of these works are on display at Design on Main at 203 Main Street this weekend and next, with an opening this evening during Art Walk. Samantha Thomas, founder and director of Global Arts Therapy, stopped by KHOI yesterday, and I was able to record an interview with her. I started by asking her what kind of art will be exhibited in the show on Design on Main, and she provided an introduction to the organization.
We're showcasing a lot of work coming from Nepal and some artwork coming from Des Moines, Iowa. We are a nonprofit organization. I founded it 3 years ago in Nepal, and we now offer programs in Nepal, Iowa, and Africa. Our tagline's always been education through art, beyond art. What we're doing is we're bringing arts education. We're helping out with ESL. We're working on trauma programs now that are specific to each village we work in. We're currently working in an area called Kabre Palanchok with three government schools and a Balika Peace Home, which is where girls go to stay. It's a center for young women to grow and excel, to go out and be able to be independent and make a living for themselves.
Explain what kinds of things that you see come out in the artwork. What kinds of art, first of all, are you using, and then what do you see?
We're using a lot of different materials. They've coined the term green art. So we're taking green materials that are already in existence and turning them into art. A lot of the work that we're doing are group projects. So we're creating trees of hope and having the girls write down wishes or thoughts to kind of help them go through the traumatic experience of the earthquake. It's important to dream. It's important to keep wishing. So that is one project that we've done. We're using things like bamboo, plastic rice bags, plastic bottles, really whatever we have on hand at the time. If the center is getting ready to throw it away, we try to find a way to use it. Why? Because when you throw things away in Nepal, you commonly burn them, and we're really trying to help the environment as well as create great art. So these are some things that we're doing in Nepal. Some work that you'll see in the show are drawings. We brought back a lot of drawings. You will see photographs from the earthquake, some images from different villages that got hit very hard post the first April 25th quake.
And how many people did your organization have in Nepal at that time?
There were three volunteers at the time from the United States, and during the trip, not counting the time during the quake, but also before that, we served about 800 people through various projects. And those projects included handing out women's kits or women's care kits that women didn't have access to before, simple things like soap, medical supplies, bandages, things like that that family members could also use, shampoo, just those kind of kits. And then we also did a lot of art with youth, and we brought over medicine, and we were able to just try to get programs going with the kids to help them.
It sounds like you're kept very busy thinking of all the different ways you can use your presence there to help.
Definitely. You do not have to have a lot of money to make a great difference. And that's always been our principle. And our top value is we're going to use our hands and our minds, and we're going to come together as a team to help people get through their traumas. As you may know, Nepal was going through some significant difficulties before the quake. The first quake, it just intensified. And now hearing reports from my close friends and colleagues in Nepal after the second quake, it's gotten even worse.
Okay. So that was Samantha Thompson of Global Arts Therapy. She was in Nepal during the April 25th earthquake. There was a second earthquake she referred to on May 12th, and this Samantha heard about when she disembarked from her plane coming back from Nepal. So she described the scene to me of the first earthquake.
When it happened, the first few days was really, really challenging. I mean, being on a bus and having rocks fall on the bus and the glass break out and experiencing that and seeing all of the hardships that the children and the families and everyone was going through and how we all banded together. There was a group of us.
that were staying in this guest house called Hotel Amar. Good friends of mine. I've known these guys for years. They're wonderful. But we're talking 70, 80 people underneath a steel frame. Every time the quake would hit, we would all curl up together, especially with the rain coming down. Because you have to understand, this year has been incredibly rainy. It's been extremely cold. We've had cold temperatures. Back in April, we were looking at 35, 40 degrees at night. And that's unlike Nepal weather. That's not what you normally have in Nepal during this time. And now as we get ready to go towards monsoon season starts in June, with the lack of housing, the lack of resources, I'm truly concerned for the well-being of every one of these people, because pneumonia, you have a worry of the epidemic breaking out because of no latrines. It becomes a really challenging and scary situation. An earthquake is bad enough, but imagine being in a place where poverty, no education, buildings that are not sound, and they're falling down left and right. You constantly have tremors. You've got poor kids that can't go back to school across the country. We're not just talking about one area. We're talking about throughout Nepal. And to have all of these things happening, we can't forget that it exists. We need to be making sure that people understand that this is going to be something that will affect the lives of everyone there for the next 10 to 25 years.
And so you focus somewhat not just on expressive art, but practical arts.
Absolutely. Education through art, beyond art. We try to make sure that everything that we do in Nepal is just as practical as it is therapeutic. Teaching women how to make organic pain salve, who have to go in the field to work, who have severe cases of arthritis, headaches. Women often struggle with major menstrual matters and have severe pain. So what we try to do is encourage creating pain salves and lip balms and hand creams from everything that they have right there in their own village. So it's local and sustainable.
And that's Samantha Thompson from Global Arts Therapy. She described to me also going to beekeepers and getting beeswax to make some of these salves. Quite diverse range of things that she's doing there in Nepal to help folks. Global Arts Therapy also does work in Des Moines. They have partnered with the Young Women's Resource Center, Orchard Place, Children's Cancer Connection, a Bhutanese group from Bhutan, an Iowa Nepalese Association, and also Embark. So we're really working with Asian refugees. Embark works with Burmese refugees. And some of that work is up in the exhibit. So I asked Samantha how a person gets involved in this wide-ranging, freewheeling organization.
We don't discriminate. If someone has a talent that they want to put into use, then you send an email, globalartstherapy@gmail.com, and we'll reach out to you. You do not have to be a fine artist. You don't have to be a handyman. You can be. We openly accept everyone who wants to get involved and wants to make a difference in young people's lives.
Would the person then have to pay their own plane fare over to the country? But after that, for instance, their accommodations would be taken care of?
Absolutely. Accommodation is taken care of. If you want to come volunteer, we encourage you to do art supply, kind of like a cash collection, and you cover your airfare. We help you out. We help you pick out the airfare. We give you a list of shots that you should get, vaccines before. We help you with everything. But
how long are the stints usually?
We've had people come over for 2 weeks. We've had people come over for 9 weeks. It just depends on how long people want to be there. But we can generally make it work with every schedule. It's a wonderful way to get involved. And if you don't feel like trekking on over to Nepal or Africa, we fully encourage you to get involved in the greater Des Moines community. And if volunteering, everybody's on a tight schedule, cash donations are also accepted as well.
So finally, for those who are unable to make it to the show, which is how we started off this segment, Global Arts Therapy is showing some of their work, the children's work, at Design on Main this weekend and next, and will be opening there on today for the art walk. I had Samantha describe some of the works that the children had done. And here she describes a couple of works by a talented Nepalese youth, and another, a group project from Des Moines by the group of Burmese refugees called Embark.
There was a young man who's a brilliant artist. He's in East Nepal, this area called Narangarh. This young man creates these beautiful watercolor pieces, and it's this woman's face. And this is actually in the show, Design on Main. She's crying. The colors are so rich and lustrous, and it's just this very simple, cheap, inexpensive paper, watercolor right there, and just the emotion. The piece itself will take you back and take your breath away.
Now, did you say that he's done a couple of these paintings of women with a tear?
Yeah, he has, and I'm fortunate enough to be able to show one of them in this show. There's also another piece that he did he was super proud of, and it's of an area called Pokhara, which you've got the palm tree and you've got the mountains behind it, and it's just this really beautiful landscape that he created. So we're really excited to show some of his work. We're showing a lot of collective artwork this time. We did this project with the kids at Embark. Embark is a Burmese refugee community, a really wonderful group of children that we worked with on Saturday mornings for about 4 weeks. And we created this amazing piece of artwork. And it looks like flowers that are made out of coffee filters. And each child did their own image or their own idea of what beauty looks like. We're focusing on the idea of beauty and flowers because it's springtime and kids love flowers. So this is another piece that you'll see in the show, but it's really fun and captivating.
Wow.
That makes me think of Iowa. Beautiful, warm, amazing seasons and growth.
Again, that was Samantha Thompson of Des Moines, founder and director of Global Arts Therapy. Examples of work from disadvantaged youth in Nepal and Des Moines are being displayed this weekend and next at Design on Main. And Samantha herself will be here today during Art Walk to answer any of your questions that I did not get to in my interview. Samantha herself is a multimedia artist, but obviously she also has a passion for serving others.
And Design on Main is 203 Main Street.
Yes, just around the corner from us.
That's right. This is Local Talk on KHY Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, and that was Greta Anderson. She was speaking with Samantha Thompson. Thank you for that. And Greta, you've invited two other guests here today. Why don't you introduce them?
All right. Well, we have Ron Smith and Ron Fossey here today. Welcome, Ron and Ron.
Thank you.
They are here to talk about a sport called pickleball. They are part of an informal group of pickleball players here in Ames and are organizing a pickleball clinic in association with the City of Ames Park and Rec's department tomorrow. The clinic will happen tomorrow at Innis Grove Park in the morning, 9 to 12. Ron, could you, you can decide which Ron I'm talking to. Could you please introduce our listeners to the concept of pickleball? Okay, Ron Foss is going to take
pickleball was actually, it was invented 50 years ago this year. And what it was three gentlemen from the state of Washington were out golfing, and they came home and they found that their families were pretty bored, and so they tried to come up with something to entertain them. They was going to have them play badminton. They couldn't find the birdies. We call them birdies that you hit back and forth. So what they did is they got a wiffle ball and they got some old ping pong paddles, they lowered the net, and they invented the game that way. And the game has been tweaked many, many years, but what they did is the first concept was to make the game fun. The second concept was make it easy to learn. And so anybody 5 years old to 85 years old can play this game. And it's in the last 10 years, it has just grown incredibly. And so what pickleball is It's a racket sport, and it's a combination of tennis and badminton and ping pong. And when these three gentlemen, the three main rules that they incorporated that we play today is that the serve has to be made underhanded. The ball has to bounce on both sides of the net before it can be volleyed, which means it's hit in the air. And then off the net, there is what we call a no-volley line, which is 7 foot off each side of the net, that you have to be behind that there in order to volley the ball. And so what that did is that took the big, strong players out of the game. And, well, it didn't take them out of the game, but it took them out of dominating the game so that it was a level playing field for everybody. So That's why, you know, it's a very social game, but it can also be very competitive. There's this year's the 7th national tournament in Arizona, and it's not only in the United States, but it's in other countries. But it's a very easy game to learn, and it's a safe, fun game. And I have to warn people, it's very addictive. If you ever start playing, you just can't play enough. So that kind of gives you an idea what pickleball is. It's just a matter of hitting the ball over the, you know, it's kind of like tennis. You got to serve the ball underhanded, diagonally across the court, just like tennis. And then the receiving team has to hit the ball back, and you have to let it bounce when it comes back. They can hit anywhere from there on, never has to bounce again. The only time you score points is when you're the serving team, and we normally play games to 11 and win by 2. So that's kind of a broad brush overview.
So are you still using a wiffle ball as the ball?
Well, it's not an actual wiffle ball. I mean, USAPA is the National
Pickleball Association.
Yeah, and they set the standards for the paddles, the balls, the nets, and everything. And so the ball is a little bit smaller than a wiffle ball. It's a little less than 3 inches, and it's got like either 16 or 24 holes in it, and it has to, you know, they do a bounce test on it, and it has to be able to, when it flies through the air, it has to fly straight and everything. So they're pretty sophisticated about what the balls are, what the paddles are.
And picturing a wiffle ball, is this so that you don't have to go chasing around after the ball? It doesn't go very far after it leaves the court? Or?
Well, the beauty of it, well, you might. You see, we're playing on a tennis court here that the Parks and Rec have, they've marked for us for pickleball. We've got four courts at Inis Grove that are made for pickleball, and we got two at Brookside, and Keith tells me we're going to get four more out of Emma McCarthy Lee this year, and that they'll paint the other two at Brookside for us. So we're going to have 12 courts. Now, as far as chasing the ball, the beauty of pickleball is the size of the court. The size of the court is the same as a doubles badminton court. And so really when you can play it as singles or doubles, and normally we play it as doubles. So when you're playing doubles, the court that you're actually playing in is 10 foot by 15 foot. So it's the size of a small bedroom. So you don't have to do a whole lot of running. Now, as far as if you miss a ball and it goes clear to the back of the tennis court, yeah, then you got to go get the ball. But we have several balls, so we don't have to chase every one of them.
Okay.
But you know, like when we play in other states like Florida, Arizona or something, they have actual pickleball courts where it doesn't go, you know, it's made for pickleball. So you're not chasing the ball, you know, 30 feet.
So the courts that you mentioned in Ames, four at Inis Grove, two at Brookside, those are just regular tennis courts that have been marked.
Correct.
For pickleball, just in case, like with a different color or something.
Right. So we can share. Either tennis can play or we can play.
See. Okay.
The stupid question, elephant in the room, the pickle part.
Well, there's a little controversy about how it was named. The general consensus is this, is that Joel Pritchard was at his house where they made this, invented this game. And they had this dog that would chase the ball back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, trying to get the ball every time somebody had hit it. Well, the dog's name was Pickles. And so they thought, let's call it Pickles Ball. That's the generally accepted thought today. But then there's other talk that Mr. Pritchard's wife named it after a pickle boat or something like that. I don't, you know, so I don't think there's really a definite answer. But it's a funny name, but it's a great game.
So if you show up to the clinic, there will be no pickles there.
No pickles.
No. Okay. Ron Smith, we haven't heard from you. What got you into the game?
I began playing it about 3 years ago in Florida. And in the retirement areas, this is a huge sport. Some areas have 80 to 90 pickleball courts. The park that I'm at has just upped their number from 3 to 5 over the summer. So I started playing it there. It looked like an interesting game. And I came back to Ames in the early spring and I said, we need to have pickleball in Ames. So with Ron Fossey and some other people that have played in the Arizona and Florida, we started this little group going.
And so how often do you play together?
Oh, we're playing about three times a week now, and that's not to exclude anyone else that just wants to get four people together and play at any time that the court's open.
Are those days that you get together and play, is that kind of an open invitation to others to come join you, or how does that work?
Yes, it is. We've developed a little pickleball email that we send out at the beginning of the week and describing times, and because we play outdoors, it's weather-dependent.
Right.
So there may be times that we can't play, and most people can figure out that the courts are wet or we're going to have rain, and so they won't come.
So do you have a contact information for folks who might be interested in signing up for that if they can't make it tomorrow to the pickleball clinic?
They may email me.
Okay.
And my email address is rsmith@ishsi.com.
Could you repeat that?
Yes. It's rsmith@ishsi.com.
Okay. We'll also have that on our website when we post this show. Now let's talk about the clinic that's happening tomorrow. It's at Innisgrove Park. It starts at 9. Do people have to show up at 9, or is it kind of an ongoing format where you just show up and when you can and learn, or how does that work?
You don't have to absolutely be there at 9 o'clock because we're going to be there all morning, and if people trickle in, we can just work them into a session on a court. And we may start them off with a pretty easy session, just learning to hit the ball gently at a short distance over the court before we move back, and so they get the feel of regular pickleball. But, yes, they can come in at any time, and we'll introduce them.
They don't need to sign up ahead of time?
No.
And you'll have all the equipment?
Yes. We've got pickleballs and paddle balls, or rather paddles. They just should wear court shoes. Dress comfortably, wear court shoes. Right. Don't wear flip-flops.
Is pickleball a strenuous sport?
No, you know what? Actually, it's a sport that's not designed to be speed and strength, and it's really a game that should be accuracy and patience. And most of the points are lost. 75% of the points are lost by people either hitting the ball out of bounds or hitting it into the net or trying to make a shot that they shouldn't try to make, trying to be too aggressive. And so, I mean, it's a game where you just got to learn patience and you want to have some strategy. And what Ron's talking about, where we start them off, it's what we call dinking. And it's dinking the ball over the net, back and forth, move the people left to right. And then once if somebody just hits that ball a little too high, that's when you put the ball away. And so it's really, it's not a strength game.
It's more a game of focus and coordination.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is it fun?
Yeah. It's so addictive. I mean, you know, you play until you're tired, and then you go home, and then a couple hours later, you're ready to go back and play again because that's what it's like.
What makes it fun?
The other thing, it's very social. It's the only game I've seen where when you lose, you're still happy, and everybody, you know, everybody's just having a great time. And I've never seen a sport like this where it's just contagious. I mean, if you play it, you just can't get enough of it.
That's awesome.
So it sounds like it can be both competitive or sort of just getting fitness and socialization and
exactly.
However you want to approach it.
Yeah, you can play, you know, if people just want to play to have fun, get exercise and be very social, it's very easy to do that. And like I say, I go to the national tournament and watch those players, and it's phenomenal. I mean, we play it in the Iowa Games. We play it in the Iowa Senior Games. There's tournaments all over the country all the time. Courts are growing leaps and bounds everywhere. Just here in Ames, we got people coming from Boone and Ogden and Ankeny and Huxley and State Center just to play here with us. I mean, it's just incredible.
You mentioned senior games. Is this a game that is more played by seniors than young people?
Well, it is. It especially like Ron and I, where we go south, you know, snowbirds. Yeah, it is there. But my grandkids have played it in school. I mean, Ames here has had it in the school. Gilbert's had it in the schools. So it can be played by anybody of any age. But it's generally the elderly people.
And it is a co-ed sport that we have equal numbers of women that play too.
Because it's not based on strength, so
correct.
You really can mix.
It has a lot of elements of ping pong with quickness and placement of the shot.
It sounds like a blast. I feel like I'm behind the curve here. So, well, thank you for coming in, Ron and Ron.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Why don't you repeat one more time when the clinic is and maybe give a, for anybody who doesn't know where the park is, a description of how to get to the park?
We're going to play from 9 a.m. to approximately noon, depending on how the numbers are. It's at Inness Grove Parks. Inness Grove is just east of the intersection of 24th Street and Grand Avenue. And once you come up either of those directions, you'll see the tennis courts over towards the river.
So wear sneakers and light clothing?
Yes.
And no flip-flops?
No flip-flops. That's dangerous.
Okay. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHY Community Radio, and I'm Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Greta Anderson, and we have been speaking with folks about pickleball, Ron Smith and Ron Fossey, and about the clinic that's going to be happening at Inness Grove Park tomorrow from 9 to noon.
We'll have information about that on the website.
That's right.
No registration is needed.
And we also received an update on June's public agenda for the City of Ames from the Ames Public Relations Officer, Susan Guiazda. She came by earlier, and we look forward to seeing her again at the beginning of July with another update. We also heard an interview with Samantha Thomas, who's Director of Global Arts Therapy, and there's an exhibition about them at ISU's Design Center on Main Gallery at 203 Main Street with an opening reception today, this evening. Finally, Ron Smith and Ron Fossey are here with us, introducing us to the sport of pickleball. And remember that there's the clinic tomorrow morning at Inness Grove Park, 9 to noon. Before we go out, let's listen to Belinda Merritt's calendar of music for the weekend.
Hello, this is Belinda Merritt, and I have the live music for June 5th through the 11th. On Friday, June 5th, the Box Brothers will be at Ames on the Half Shell, held at the Durham Bandshell Park, 6th Street and Duff Avenue, from 5 o'clock until 8 o'clock p.m. Infusion will be at Snooze Hill Winery, 2183 320th Street, Madrid, from 6:30 until 9:30 p.m. Saucy Jack will be at RC's Lounge, 607 Pennsylvania Avenue, Story City, for the Scandinavian Days Street Dance. Salty View's Acoustic Review will be at Westtown Pub, 4518 Mortensen Road. Dr. Murdoch will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. Viva Shea will be at Crossroads Tavern, 1790 Giddings Street in Kelly. On Saturday, June 6th, Final Vagabonds will be at the Campus Town Summerfest Beer Garden, to be held in the 200 block of Welch Avenue from 4 until 6 o'clock p.m. They are to be followed by Standing Hampton. In Telescope and Nude Girls will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. On Sunday, June 6th, Burnin' Sensations will be at Snooze Hill Winery, 2183 320th Street, Madrid, from 2 until 5 o'clock p.m. David G. Smith will be at Prairie Moon Winery, 3801 West 190th Street, from 3 o'clock until 6 o'clock p.m. Sumpin' Dew will be at Roosevelt School Summer Sundays at 7 o'clock p.m. The Way Down Wanderers will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. On Wednesday, June 10th, The Lowest Pair with Fred Love will be at Blue Stem, which was formerly Zeke's, 3329 Lincoln Way, from 8 until 11 o'clock p.m. All ages are welcome, and tickets are available at eventbrite.com. On Thursday, June 11th, 515 will be at DG's Tap House, 125 Main Street. That's all I have for this week. Thank you.
And that was Belinda Merritt with music updates. Obviously, quite a lot going on in Ames these days. Local Talk was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. Nice last name. Music you heard included Dill Pickle Rag by Charles Johnson from the CD Second Course. And our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can listen to this show and all of our Local Past shows online at our website, khoyfm.org. That's khoyfm.org. And see listings of our guests and resource contact information.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshops as well as a radio show. So if you'd like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or through our website, khoyfm.org. And remember to stop by KHOI today during artwork 5 to 8. We are at 410 Douglas Avenue in the Old Ames Pantorium. Lots going on here.
Yes, your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.